everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, managing editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's June 2024, and you're listening to episode 398, which is a discussion about the educational philosophy of Charlotte Mason. Today's guest is Dr. Shannon Whiteside. She is the program director for Charlotte Mason's Alviary, a Charlotte Mason Institute department. Shannon has written a feature-length article for the Christian Research Journal, and her article is called Charlotte Mason, 1842 to 1923, Pioneer of Relational Education. And you can read her article for free on our website, equip.org. That's EQUIP.org. Shannon, good to have you on. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Glad to join you.
Well, this might be a slightly different topic than we normally do for the Postmodern Realities podcast, but it's going to be a fascinating one. And so I want our listeners to hang in there. I think one of the things, maybe if you hear that we're going to be talking about education, although if you're a longtime subscriber to the Christian Research Journal, we have done articles on education, why a Christian education has merit, and different things about Christian education, even at the collegiate level. And so you can go to our back archives. These articles are on our website, equip.org. But some people might be thinking, well, this has to primarily do with education of children, and or you might think that, and you think, well, I don't have kids, I'm not planning to have kids, or my kids are grown, and so this doesn't concern me. But actually, I think just where the next generation is should concern all Christians, because the Bible calls us to that. It calls us to caring about the next generation, passing down biblical truth to next generation, and all of that is encompassed in how kids are raised, what they learn, and all these kinds of issues. And as a matter of fact, last year in a piece that we did for the Christian Research Journal, we talked about specifically homeschooling, why that should be. It was an opinion piece, because educational choices can be, have challenges when people think about them, their different choices. And we talked about why that should be under consideration. And then we also had some discussion on Hank's podcast on Hank Unplugged, just about different very anti-Christian agenda that is woven into certain educational curriculum, and that Christians should really be aware of that and perhaps not select that option for their children if that's possible. So again, we understand that this is not necessarily something you've been thinking about education, but we want to talk about why it's important, and specifically by focusing on this historic figure, Charlotte Mason. And so before we get into her beliefs, I just want to ask Shannon, how would you describe, you know, the current educational landscape in the United States in particular?
I would say that right now there is quite dissatisfaction, as we can see, with the public school system, and many parents are looking for alternatives. So there's a lot of questions being asked, and I think that's a really good place to be, and not just accepting things as they are. And there's a lot of factors contributing to this dissatisfaction: the safety of schools, the negative peer pressure, the indoctrination happening at many schools against beliefs of Christian families, the emphasis on standardized testing that gears the curriculum and instruction around those tests, the overuse of technology in schools. Also, parents of neurodiverse children don't think the schools are meeting their needs as well. So all these factors are contributing to parents looking for alternative models of education. And so it's an exciting time to be an educator and a curriculum writer like I am, and part of an education organization. We particularly work with homeschools and schools as well that want more of an alternative model. but also there are charter schools being started and many religious schools and even micro schools, which is a little newer of a movement. They're small institutions that serve around 16 children or more or less, and they offer full-time, part-time, or hybrid instruction. So there's a lot of things happening. A lot of parents are reimagining what school can look like. And they're not afraid to explore methods that move away from traditional lecture-based instruction to instruction that addresses the child as a whole and wants to address their spiritual, emotional, physical, and intellectual needs. So just to give you some numbers with the homeschool community, according to some data we have from the National Household Education Survey, 5.4% of students in grades kindergarten through 12th were reported to be homeschooled in 2020 to 21, which was doubled from the statistics of the previous year. And the reasons that they are choosing to homeschool, the highest one was because of their concern for the school environment, such as safety, drugs, or negative peer pressure. 70% of parents said they wanted to provide moral instruction, and almost 60% of parents reported a desire to provide religious instruction. So there is an interest in newer models, different ways of looking at education, and obviously with Christian education, wanting to provide that. So it's an exciting time to be part of this. And I personally am interested in educational alternatives. I homeschool my three children and just graduated my oldest. And I'm the program director for a Charlotte Mason curriculum as well. So I believe Charlotte Mason can address a lot of these issues that parents are concerned about.
So you mentioned homeschooling, and I just want to tell our listeners that it's not just the purview, actually, of people who are religious, and I just wanted to give them some stats. I had noticed an article in the Washington Post back in 2023, and the title of the article is called "Homeschooling's Rise from Fringe to Fastest Growing Form of Education." And the Washington Post did some independent surveys and studies of just how many people have gone to homeschooling and what the change has been since 2017 to now. And I thought this was really fascinating because there's a stereotype that the people who are homeschooling are in certain pockets of the country that have more religious emphasis, or, you know, there are more churches in those parts of the country, et cetera, where they might be more politically conservative or something like that. But this is fascinating what the Washington Post found, because they showed that California to now has increased by 78%. That's on the West Coast. New York was an increase of 103% of people who are homeschooling. And in DC, it was 108%. And for example, in Rhode Island, again, in the Northeast, 91%. And that showed the percentage increase through 2023, as opposed to from previously, like before COVID. And so it was really interesting that these kinds of issues are not just a concern for people who are Christians, although they are very much concerning. But the whole idea of homeschooling is not just a small sliver. It's becoming a very popular option for parents of all faiths and all persuasions. And particularly, I was surprised in parts of the country that I wouldn't think would normally be electing to homeschool kids. So for example, I'd love to ask you specifically about Christian parents. I mean, I just wanted everyone to hear the statistics from a secular paper that did a survey on this, just to see the increase, the dramatic increase in children being homeschooled as recent as 2023. But for Christians, what should Christian parents consider when they're thinking, okay, I would like to homeschool, or choosing what kind of homeschooling to do, or particularly curriculum? Because once you make that decision to homeschool, then you have to think of, okay, what curriculum as a parent am I going to use to teach my child?
Right. So every method is tied to some kind of educational philosophy. So I think that's important to recognize. You don't want to just pick something randomly, but to really think through, I would say these three areas. So it's important to figure out what you believe about the nature of the learner. and how you view children and how they learn and the best ways they learn. And then you also need to understand the role of the teacher. Well, how do you want the teachers? Are you going to be telling them everything they need to know and imparting that knowledge to them? Or do you want to be more a guide who is helping them to explore and learn? And you also need to figure out your goal of education. Is it just to get good grades, to get into the best college, to get a job, or is there more to it? And as Christians, I think we need to take a step back from the way school's traditionally been done and realize a lot of that foundation is not built on valuing who the child is and the learner, and not valuing education and the goals we should have to create lifelong learners who love to read and to learn and to grow and to learn about God's world. And so I think it's really good to reevaluate all those things. So when you think about the nature of the learner, a lot of times when we think of the metaphors we have, it shapes how we think about things. So if you think of a child as a sponge, you might just think, oh, I need to give them all this information and they should just memorize it and regurgitate it and tell it back to me. And we know that they're more than that, but sometimes we just live out of these metaphors and then we make decisions based on that. When I was a teacher in a classroom many years ago, I had that kind of metaphor in my mind that students are really good at memorizing at young ages, I was told. And maybe they are, but sometimes you go too far with that. And so I was giving them a lot of just information, just memorize this. It doesn't really matter if you understand, because you can learn about it later, or you can understand it later. And it doesn't really matter maybe what you're memorizing. It's just good to have. And I realized later that that wasn't valuing who they were as people and as learners, to just give them information that is not relevant to them, that they weren't understanding. And so I think it's really important to figure out what we think about students and the way they learn. Do we also view them as blank slates in a sense, or, empty vessels that we need to fill? And we need to tell them what to think about things, or how to think about this, or the information that they need to know. So I think that's important for us to wrestle with. And Charlotte Mason was really good at that area, and thinking about who the students were and the capabilities that they come with. And a lot of ways you can look at that is to just observe your child. Sometimes we're so busy just thinking this is what they need, or this is how they need to learn because this is how I did it in school, or this is how I read about this idea and it sounds interesting. But to just observe our students and see the way that they think about things, the way that they process ideas, the things that they're talking about, and it will give us a lot of insight. We also need to think about our goal of education. If we want them to have a love of learning, then we need to think about how that would look. If we are constantly grading everything and giving them tests and measuring everything in that way, then that's going to kill their love of learning. They're just going to ask, is this on the test? And that's all they want to know. But is there another way to think about learning where we can learn together and grow, and knowledge is not just this body of static knowledge that we can just check off? And then we also need to think about the role of the teacher. So especially, with these alternative ways of learning, we have that freedom, and that's what's so neat. So is there something that we can do differently than maybe what was modeled to us as a teacher? Can we more help them become active in their learning and not just telling them what they need to know? So I think it's good to just first step back and figure out these other ways, the other ways of learning than maybe the norm or what you were taught when you were in school, and taking some time to think about what your end goal is, and do these methods and practices, will they get me to that end goal? So if I want a love of learning, Well, will testing and worksheets and all that get me to that end goal? And it probably won't. So maybe there are other ways we can get to that end goal.
You might be wondering what's coming up this summer on the Postmodern Realities podcast. And I just want to get you a glimpse of some of the topics that we will be covering. Now, we are almost to a huge milestone, and that is episode 400. We will have Dr. Phil Tallon back with us from Houston Christian University, and he's going to be talking to us about Christopher Nolan films. So we started 400 episodes ago talking about the film catalog of Quentin Tarantino, and now we're all the way up to Christopher Nolan films. So that's going to be coming to you in July. And if you listen to our recent episode talking about Qi and New Age energies, we are going to apply that to various different massage therapies. So many massage places that people go for sports therapy and all these kinds of things have different kind of New Age rooted massage therapies. Hot stone cupping, are any of these okay for Christians to participate in? And then we have an article for you coming up on how to comfort believers when unbelieving family members die. And of course, we're going to continue on now that Hollywood is back in working and pumping out different films. We've got a look at M. Night Shyamalan films, specifically getting into it through his upcoming film called Trap. We also have the latest in the Alien series, which started all the way back in the 1970s. Plus, a huge hot review of a big book that started out on TikTok and sold over a million copies just on TikTok. That's The Shadow Work Journal by Keila Shaheen. We're going to be reviewing that. What do Christians need to know about The Shadow Work Journal? Should they do a Shadow Work Journal? And so we have so much more coming up besides all of that, but we just wanted to give you a taste of what's going to come up. Now, as always, can you please help us out with the algorithm? Because that's how really people find content. The algorithm kind of dictates what we see. And so you could help us out a lot by giving us a rating or review, specifically on Apple Podcasts. A really quick way to just give us a starred review. But if you have some time to give us a sentence review, that's just so helpful, because the more that we get, the better it is, because it seems like our show is popular, which I hope it is popular. I hope you are enjoying it. Now, all of our content and this podcast, as well as all of our new articles every week, are not under a paywall. There's no subscription anymore for the Christian Research Journal. So could you please help us out maybe with a tip if you like all of this content? Because we think our authors are worth their hire and we do pay them. So we would be grateful if you would give us a tip. As I say, every time, the best way you can find us, especially if you're new to this podcast, would be go to our website, equip.org. And then if you click on journal, click on Postmodern Realities, at any one of those landing pages, you will see a link where you could give us a tip. I'm thinking something small, like the cost of your favorite latte at your favorite barista place. So $3 or $5, although lattes are around $5 now, or $10. It really helps us out, and we'd be really grateful for your continued support. And now, back to my conversation with Dr. Shannon Whiteside about Charlotte Mason. Well, today I want to talk with you specifically about one particular educational philosophy, and it's really gaining popularity with homeschoolers. And also not just homeschoolers, but in other settings, including private schools. And it's called the Charlotte Mason Method. And can you briefly tell us who was Charlotte Mason and what were her contributions to the field of education?
Yes, Mason was an English educationalist. She lived from 1842 to 1923. She came from a humble background. And she was orphaned at the age of 16. So at that time, she became a student pupil. And then she attended a training college that was based on the principles of Pestalozzi, who was an educational reformer. And then she also taught at an infant school, which was a school in England for children ages 4 to 7. And then she became a lecturer at a teacher training college. So she didn't have the highest level of education, but she was always interested in educational theories and philosophy and also observing children and learning just from, like I was mentioning before, you know, what are they talking about and what are they capable about? So she made a lot of observations through her years of teaching. So then in 1885, she was ready to join this educational conversation. She offered a series of lectures as a fundraiser for her church. And that actually became her first volume in her home education series. So she offered many ideas about how to raise children that are under 9 years old and what we need to think about. And her ideas struck many influential women that were in attendance, and they wanted to do something with these ideas. So they started what was called the Parents National Education Union, and it was to promote education and child rearing principles. And then they wanted to expand these ideas and how do we implement them with our children? So then she's also then started a teacher's training college when she was about 50 years old in Ambleside, England, and she called that the House of Education. It was a 2-year program for governesses to learn her principles and methods. And so then those governesses would go out to different homes and teach the Charlotte Mason method. She also started a correspondence school, so she would send out curriculum to the different homes in England and even abroad. And she wrote a lot of books that talked about her philosophy, so we can continue to learn about it. It was a 6-volume series. One of the volumes was actually written to students, and it's part of her citizenship curriculum about character formation. She also was the editor of a monthly educational journal that she would send out to teachers and families to learn more about her methods and the current educational ideas of her day. So she spent the rest of her life until she was in her 80s in Ambleside, tending to all these educational endeavors and keeping her hands in all those areas as just a great leader. And so she was really good as a visionary with all these ideas, but she was also very practical and knew how to implement all these ideas in schools and in homeschools across the country of England and, like I said, abroad. But then after she died, things slowly over time just kind of dwindled. Many of the schools closed down or the government took them over. Her training college became an extension of the University of Cumbria eventually, and even her volumes went out of print. And so for many years, her ideas were forgotten. There were little pockets of places, perhaps, that still followed her principles, and there was still some influence here and there. But really, overall, her ideas could have been lost. And so I think they just lay low for quite many years.
So you talked about how she was from England, but how did her ideas then reach North America? And particularly, why do you think Charlotte Mason's ideas are resonating with so many people, specifically in the United States?
Yeah, it's a fascinating story. I'm sure people are familiar with Frances Schaeffer. His daughter, Susan Schaeffer Macaulay, is the one that we can credit with bringing the philosophy of Charlotte Mason to North America. She was living in England. She was looking for a school for her daughter, and she found this small one-room schoolhouse at the back of a cottage, and she noticed a difference in her daughter and her newfound excitement for learning. So she asked the teacher there, you know, what was happening at the school, and what's my daughter so excited? And she comes home and tells me about all these books she's reading. And they told her that they are a PNEU school, which were the Charlotte Mason schools. And as I said, there weren't many of those left, but they were still this following her principles in this small English village in southern England. And so Susan Schaeffer Macaulay was intrigued, and she was able to get hold of Charlotte Mason's volumes that were out of print. And she started reading them and researching them and was just so fascinated by this philosophy of education that doesn't just affect school, but really affects all of learning. And it's just these living ideas that really resonate with even parents and teachers and anybody that is interested in knowing our world and seeing things with new eyes. So she was the impetus for getting the volumes reprinted. And then what she did was, Susan Schaefer McCauley, is she wrote a book in 1984. It was published called For the Children's Sake. And that was the book where an American audience was now introduced to Charlotte Mason. And I don't know how many people read that book, but actually I don't think it's gone out of print since then. So slowly by slowly, new generations are picking up that book. I know that was the first book I read when I heard about Charlotte Mason, and I know many people have that same story. So there were some people that back in the 80s, perhaps, or early 90s that read that book and started some schools. Many homeschoolers started to implement this philosophy, but it took a while to kind of figure out what exactly, you know, the day-to-day looks like in a Charlotte Mason education. And slowly it's catching on. And there were organizations started, conferences. I found out about Charlotte Mason about 14 years ago. So I've been learning about her since then. But the sad thing is that in education classes in college, she was never talked about. So I never heard about her at my college, and I was at a Christian college. And so we're hoping that can be changed and more people can begin to learn about her methods. But if you do Google her name, you will see there are quite a bit, number of searches and more people interested in learning about her. And I think what resonates is that it's just the way she viewed children was just so refreshing. And the way she viewed learning, it's when you read her works, it's not so earth shattering. You almost can just relate to it and be like, yes, that's what I've always thought. That's what I've always felt about children. But you just didn't think it was possible to really implement it in schools. And she shows how it is possible to implement those principles and to really, and shows us how to help them come to fruition. So I think the two main areas that really resonate is her love of nature and the emphasis she puts on nature study. And that is a big part of a Charlotte Mason education, to get young kids into nature as much as possible. And then even when they start school at 6, have them outside, have them observing things in nature, doing nature journaling. Just the importance of falling in love with the outdoors, with God's world, and how that's just so great for us as people, but also really great as a foundation for science. And the other area that people really resonate with is her love of books. And she calls them living books. They're books that are well written with more of a literary quality, with a narrative thread, written by someone who has a heart for and a passion for their subject. They're not just the fact-based encyclopedia kind of books that we might see in classrooms that don't inspire us or have any ideas. But these are books that engage children intellectually and emotionally. And so those are, I would say, the two areas that people have really resonated with.
So specifically, what is Charlotte Mason's view of the nature of the learner, and how does that affect her educational methods? It was really interesting. I first came across who Charlotte Mason was through friends homeschooling a really long time ago, maybe a couple decades ago, and I just was kind of surprised. I guess I expected it was somebody contemporary, did not know it was someone from a long time ago in England. And so I'm curious to find out, you know, how she looked at learners and how it affected her educational methods, because that is what is attracting people to use her methods.
She begins her philosophy, or bases her philosophy, with this simple yet profound statement: children are born persons. So she's declaring this idea that children are born with intelligence, the ability to observe and communicate, with moral sensibilities, and they just lack knowledge in how to use all the possibilities they have. But they are so capable in so many ways. And this idea that they're not blank slates that we need to write on, or empty sacks that we need to fill. They're complete. Their mind is complete, she would say. And they have all they require for learning. So we are not trying to produce their mind or do mental gymnastics to exercise their mind, but they have what they need and they are very capable. Also, it means that they're a person is that we should respect them for who they are. We can't manipulate them and have them believe whatever we want them to believe, in the sense of with our opinions. That doesn't mean we don't want to instill in them a love for the Bible and truth and all that, but we can't make them believe and mold them into exactly what we want them to be. They are a separate person and we don't own them. So we need to use other ways to positively influence them. And she would talk about how we can use atmosphere to influence them in positive ways. The atmosphere that we provide where they're learning and growing, an atmosphere that has a love of learning, an atmosphere that has a respect for each other. And even in their atmosphere, we can't make it artificial. Like, they just naturally will learn from the circumstances that they are part of, the family they are part of. And all those are ways that they are growing as a person and learning and becoming the person that God wants them to be. So when we look at them as capable of thinking and reasoning and grappling with ideas, then that means that we have to give them a curriculum that allows them to do those things. And that's where her idea of living books comes in. So when we want them to learn about something, we give them books and they learn from the books and the author. So they have this mind-to-mind meeting where they are learning and growing through books and through observations outside, through art, through music. And we let them come to conclusions and we let them come to make their own connections. And we don't over-explain everything, because learning is progressive and they will continue to grow and learn over time and as they get older. But we don't want to just dump everything on them and tell them everything that we think they need to know. We want to respect who they are as people. And when we let them become active in their learning, they're more excited about learning because they are having the aha moments. They are making the connections. They are learning about things on their own. And the learning becomes personal, it becomes meaningful, and it becomes more exciting. So that's a big part of what she is talking about with children are born persons, is that they are capable of learning. And so we need to make sure our methods are respectful of who they are and the way we treat them. And we also need to also realize children as persons, that means that they are built for community and relationship. And so we need to give them access to many subjects and many topics and continue to grow and learn in all areas. And as people created in the image of God, that they will have a natural affinity, Mason would say, for all kinds of knowledge, knowledge of the universe, knowledge of God, knowledge of history, knowledge of art, as people, that these are all things that we are interested in. So we don't want to limit what we expose them to because we might not like it or we think they might not like it. But there is just this natural born affinity that all people have. And we want to expose them to all those areas and see what relationships they will build and give them this wide area to explore.
So, in particular, what was Charlotte Mason's view of the goal of education? I also want to ask you, you talked a lot about books and reading. Does the Charlotte Mason, you know, philosophy, do you give people, here are the list of all the books, you know, per grade that someone should read, or is a little bit more, you know, free form, I would say, that she has these specific philosophies and goals about education, and within that, the parent would choose curriculum or choose specific books that would fit that?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I'll start with the goal of education. And she said that education is the science of relations, or we would say relationship. So it's this idea that, as I was saying, students are built or are made as people made in the image of God for relationship. And they're born to want to make connections to all these domains of life. So we have music and poetry and nature and history and art, science, geography, language, math. And so as we expose students to these various areas, they build relationships with the people from history as they read about them, the characters of literature, the people and places across the world as they read about geography, as they do nature study, they're building relationships with the flora and fauna in their own backyard, the art and the paintings of artists throughout time. So as they're learning, they're making connections with all these areas. And they're not necessarily, they might make connections to the various areas and seeing how things are related, but really they're making more of a connection to themselves, that all these things are related to who they are as people, because they come to realize, oh, these things are interesting that I never thought I would be interested in. Now, it doesn't mean every student loves every area, but it is really amazing to see how they awaken to knowledge that they didn't even know they would be interested in or didn't even know about. Because when you learn in this way, where you're reading these books that have more ideas and are more narrative and quality, and you're reading story, they can relate to that. So they're just a lot of times relating to other people. And no matter when they were born many years ago, they can still relate to that. So there's just these ideas that come to life as you encounter education in this way. And also, when you're not tested on it, you know, in a true and false test or reading comprehension worksheets or things like that, then you can enjoy what you're learning and not be so worried, is this going to be on the test? Or what do I really need to know about this? That's all I want to know. And I don't care about the rest. So it allows them to just approach things with this open mind. And then they begin to grow they begin to care about the things they're learning about, and in a sense, build friendships. So if they went to an art gallery and they saw the paintings on the wall, they would get excited. Oh, we studied that painting, or we looked at that painting. Or students want to go to Shakespeare plays because they read about Shakespeare. Or they might hear some kind of something on the news about a historical event, and they'll have that connection to it. It's because they are learning in this way that is more holistic and more relational, then they're just more interested in learning, and they see how it applies to their life and who they are as people. So her goal is to just build these relationships and interests that would last their whole life, that they will have concern and care for other things, and that these ideas will spark new ideas, and ideas will also spark action. And so it's not about knowing having a set body of knowledge that you know, that you've mastered, that you can, you know, check off the list, but it is to be filled to have all these relationships that you have built over the years. And then to also have this idea that you are still interested in learning more, because in a Mason education, we try to help children understand this is not all there is to know. And this is just the beginning. So you have your whole life to explore all these topics. So they go into it with that mindset, and it really makes a difference in how they view education.
So it's more of a philosophy, less of, okay, here are all the books that you need to buy for the kindergarten curriculum or the first grade or even high school curriculum.
Yes and no. You know, it's not. Now, she had a book list that she would send out to her for her correspondence school. And that was what she called her program. And her program are, here's the books that you will read, because she would go through, you know, maybe a certain history cycle. And that's also what our organization does as well. So we do put together, here's the books that we will read, and we have different history cycles. We have four rotations that we do, but those are flexible. I mean, we're not using the same book Charlotte Mason used. You know, there might be some overlap here and there with some classics. So it's not so much about using the exact book she used at all, but because there's old books that are great. There's new books that are great that have these living ideas in them. So there is a structure to it, and there are specific methods to follow, but there is flexibility within that. So yes, you could just with your students say, I want to follow Charlotte Mason method, and we can find books on these topics, and we can explore these areas, and you can do that. However, there is curriculum out there that might make it a little more simple, because that could be overwhelming to constantly be looking for books in all these areas and trying to figure all that out. So yes, there's flexibility with that, but we also have, you know, some curriculum out there that has guidance for those that want a little more help in how to implement it.
So you described how Charlotte Mason viewed children and how she thought they would learn, or what the nature of the kind of learning that would help children develop. So given that, what kind of role would the teacher have in this educational method? And I do want to remind our listeners, it's not just homeschoolers, although a lot of homeschoolers use this educational method, but there are schools that use her educational method. So it's not necessarily just a parent homeschooling, but what does the role of the teacher of this curriculum look like in her particular method?
Yes. Yes, there are many schools, and more schools are using it. So yeah, that's a good point to bring out. So the role of the teacher is one of the distinguishing features of her method. It is quite unique, because most of the time, when we think of the teacher, they're the one in the front doing all the talking, explaining, connecting of the ideas, writing things on the whiteboard. They're the ones telling the students what they need to know or the takeaways that they should get from reading the text. But in Mason's methods, in a lot of ways, it's flipped upside down. Now, the teacher is still valued, definitely, and has a role to play. But she would say the teacher is more of a guide, facilitator, and a friend. Now, the teacher still has authority. The Charlotte Mason method is not a child-centered or unschooling method where kind of anything goes, or things are based on the interests of the children or what they feel like doing. There's definitely that sense of authority with the teacher and respect for the teacher. So that's set. So, you know, once that is set and in place, there is a freedom then to be the student's guide, facilitator, and friend. So she says that the education is the art of standing aside. So as the educator, your role is to stand aside and let the children develop these relationships that I had talked about. So the teacher's role, usually, like specifically in a lesson, would be to first introduce the lesson. Well, first they would recap the lesson and say, you know, what did we learn last time? And that's just a way to kind of get them thinking about the topic. And it actually is really good for long-term memory to go back and think about what they read last time. But that'd be, you know, a quick thing you would do in a minute or two, just the students will recap what they read. And then the teacher will do a very short introduction, just maybe, again, a couple minutes, and just to maybe give them a question to get them interested in the next topic, or look at a map to see the context of what they're about to read, or give them any background information they might need. But then the bulk of the time is spent on reading reading the book that they're reading. And again, because these books are written in engaging ways, written by authors who are trying to communicate well with the students. So when they're reading, the teacher is not stopping them and explaining things or interrupting the flow or explaining even words, vocabulary words. If they wanted to explain anything, they need to do that before they start reading. Because once they start reading, that's where that relationship is being built, where the students are then realize, I need to know what's going on and be active in what I'm reading. And then after they read, this is where Charlotte Mason's foundational practice of narration comes into play. So as I said, she doesn't do worksheets and reading comprehension questions and fill in the blank tests. So what she does is narration. It's retelling what you just read. And it is a natural practice that everyone can do that just helps us to process what we read. It helps put that into long-term memory. It helps us to pay attention when we're reading, knowing that we're going to have to tell it back. So this practice of narration is used pretty much in every lesson. You can do it orally. You can do written narrations. You can draw pictures. You can act it out. So there's a lot of different ways you can do narration, but it needs to be built into every lesson. She calls it the act of knowing. Because if you're not able to somehow retell it in any of those ways, then pretty much that knowledge is lost. It's not going to become assimilated and absorbed and processed. So that is where the student is very active. So that's why the teacher doesn't have to be so doing all the work, because really the student needs to do that work. And she calls that self-education. And so the role of the teacher is to make sure all those processes are happening and that they are guiding the student through those processes. And after they narrate, there might be time for a short discussion. There might be questions that students have or open-ended questions the teacher can ask about what they read. And even at that time, the teacher is not supposed to be too opinionated or over-explaining things, but just letting things sit and simmer. And it's just fascinating in that kind of environment, how much learning actually takes place, because students realize that the teacher is not going to tell them what to think. And so they step up and do the thinking and the learning. And then it becomes more exciting because it's become personal for them. And they just learn so much more through doing it that way.
So are there any other principles that Charlotte Mason had that you want to talk about in addition to some of the ones that you've already explained?
Yes, I'd like to mention another important principle. She calls this the great recognition. It's this idea that we are creating an atmosphere where there's no division between the sacred and secular, between sacred and secular knowledge, but this recognition that all truth comes from God, and therefore is worthy to study and to learn about and to enjoy. I think this is such an important principle. And I know for myself personally, I grew up with this separation in my mind between things that are sacred or spiritual and things that are secular. And I didn't know how to reconcile the two. I always felt like there was this discord in my Christian walk. I didn't really understand how the stuff of life, the material things or the mundane things really related to the spiritual aspects of my life. I felt like I lived in two separate worlds. I would go to school and learn about science and art and literature and math. And then on Sundays, I would go to church and hear about, you know, the Lord and sing hymns and read the Bible. And I just didn't really know how those two went together. And so living with this dichotomy made me actually less interested in those subjects of science and art. And I just thought, well, maybe it's just a waste of time. I should just focus on eternal matters. And it was really hard to know what to do. And it's just so fascinating because Charlotte Mason realized in her time as well that young people also had this kind of this discord in their life, and that it was, that's a really serious issue. It's not maybe, you know, this kind of confusion like I had. I still, you know, was a faithful follower of the Lord. But Mason also acknowledged that some kids can just walk away from the Lord because they don't really see how God relates to anything else. So they're just going to choose this other route. And so she wanted students and children to realize that there is no discord, that the Holy Spirit is the source of all knowledge and all truth. And learning about science and art and math is just learning about God's world. And he is the source of all that truth. So you don't have to worry about, oh, should I spend time, you know, only spend time in Bible study, or should I read this literature book, or can I enjoy taking a walk in nature or working on math problems? Yes. She said, you can enjoy all those things. And in fact, she said, they are a Godward movement. And when you learn about all those topics and all those things, it's not taking you away from the Lord. It's actually helping you understand who he is and all these ideas that come from him. And it helps you to also just acknowledge that we have such a generous God who has given us such a wonderful world to enjoy. And these are all gifts for us to enjoy, and we don't have to feel guilty about learning about it. And it just opens up this new wonder for everything. And I know for me personally, when I came to learn about Charlotte Mason and this principle in particular, I was just so relieved, and I began just this newfound excitement for so many things that I had neglected, a new joy in being outside and in nature, a new joy in learning about art and really any topic. I mean, I just love all subjects as I do them with my children and as I learn on my own. And because when you have this understanding, you don't have to try to fit God into it and say, well, how does this integrate with my faith? It just becomes part of your way of thinking. I can't help but think about the Lord when I'm out walking in nature, really in any subject I'm thinking. It's just who he is comes through when you have this recognition and this understanding. And that's what she really wanted to communicate and really wanted students to see. And I think it really comes through naturally when you approach learning through this way of living books and narration and ideas. Because knowledge is seen as this relationship. And so you have this sense that it is all part of God's gifts to us. And you don't see knowledge as this isolated bits of information that don't relate to you when it's approached in a different way. So that was a really important principle of Charlotte Mason that she wanted students to realize and also educators, obviously, to realize. And that's been really meaningful to me personally.
And so why should Christian parents seriously consider a Charlotte Mason education? It sounds like it would be a huge paradigm shift for some people.
Yes. And, you know, as you mentioned, Charlotte Mason is for everyone. Whether you know you're a Christian or not, her principles are true. They're just true of who we are as people and the reality of this world. And yes, she was a Christian, but her principles are life-giving for anyone. But as we think of Christian education, sometimes we just think it's the content that just matters. You know, as long as we have books that contain objective truth and portray reality in line with scripture, that's a Christian education. Or, you know, making sure we have Bible class or if it's a school, if we have chapel once a week. So that's all we look at is the content. But I think we also need to look at other areas, not just the content, but what about the methods or the way we view our students? Or the way we handle discipline or classroom management. So these are all things that should be thought of as pertaining to Christian education. There's some current authors that I really appreciate who are helping us think about Christian education as more than content. And one author, or he's a professor at Calvin College in particular, is David I. Smith. And he talks about this and he asks the question, what might be Christian about the teaching and learning practices in our classroom? So not just the content, but what about the practices that can be distinctively Christian? Or what does that even mean? So when we read the Bible in class or a book on church history, but if our, you know, we can say, okay, this is, you know, Christian education. But then if the students are given a multiple choice test on that content of the Bible, how will that affect their engagement and attitude toward Bible class? That's just giving them this impression that they only need to memorize, you know, they only need to memorize enough information about the Bible to be able to take the test. And then they could, you know, say they learned it. Or it's just giving them, it's not just a bad attitude, I think, or a wrong attitude about knowledge and about learning. And so I don't think that's really honoring of, again, who students are and honoring to the Bible. And so I think the methods we use also need to be taken into consideration as Christians. And if we want them to think about knowledge as this relationship as just a starting point for the rest of our lives, we need to think about the practices that we are engaged in and think about, are they relatable? Are they meaningful to students? Are they helping them to get at knowledge, or are they just helping them do well on a test? So, and also with classroom management things, how are we doing that with our students as well? Are we treating them as persons, or are we just kind of managing them and almost like we would with animals or something like that, very behavioristic methods? So, and I think another reason Christian parents should consider Charlotte Mason education is what I talked about before, that whole idea that she wants to create an atmosphere where there's no dichotomy between the sacred and secular knowledge. And I think that's a really big deal and a way to help young people just really understand how faith and learning tie together and not be so confused about that. So I really, and I know a lot of schools are trying to do that. They will ask, how can we integrate faith and learning? And they might put a Bible verse in a subject or have a discussion about something. And that might be okay, but that is a little more contrived. And I think students will see that. But if we just provide this atmosphere where they see that the Holy Spirit is their teacher in all these areas and that learning about this is a Godward movement, I think that young people won't have to try to fit in, you know, where does my faith fit in with learning? They will just have that understanding that will be more implicit to who they are. So I think those two things really are Charlotte Mason addresses so well, and it just helps us be consistent with what we're doing as Christians, saying we care about children holistically, and we care about not just what they're learning, but how they're learning it, and realizing that practices are formative as well. And I think that's a really important thing to consider.
I think all of these things are a lot of good food for thought. I think that most of us would agree in general that education has become really commodified as a means to an end, just what kind of education you need to get a particular job or those kinds of things, instead of understanding what it means to be a learner. So this will give everyone a lot of good food for thought. Well, finally, on a much lighter note, I have some fun rapid fire questions for Shannon, and she's new on the podcast. So Shannon, what's your favorite meal?
Probably salmon.
And are you an early bird or night owl?
I am a night owl. Wish I was not, but I can't change it.
And are you a list maker or do you like to just wing it?
I'm kind of both. I don't know if that's, I make a list, but then I don't always get to them.
And you live in Indiana. So what's your favorite thing about living in Indiana?
I live 3 blocks from Lake Michigan. So it's a beautiful area by the Indiana Dunes. So my favorite thing is to walk in the dunes and see the lake view.
Well, Well, thanks, Shannon, for being a guest on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Thank you for this opportunity. It was great to talk with you today.
You've been listening to episode 398 of the Postmodern Realities podcast. Today's guest was Dr. Shannon Whiteside. She has written a feature-length article for the Christian Research Journal. Her article is called Charlotte Mason, 1842 to 1923, Pioneer of Relational Education. And you can read her article for free on our website, equip.org. You won't want to miss out on subscribing to the other podcasts from the Christian Research Institute. We have the Bible Answer Man podcast, which is published Monday through Friday with the best of the week on Saturday. It's hosted by CRI President Hank Handegraff and is available wherever you get your favorite podcasts. In addition, Hank has a podcast called Hank Unplugged. Hank takes you out of the studio and into his study to engage in free-flowing, essential Christian conversations on critical issues with some of the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people on the planet. And you won't want to miss out on the brand new podcast from the Christian Research Journal. Christian Research Journal Reads presents audio versions of Christian Research Journal articles. It was a print incarnation of almost 45 years. It's now on the web, as you know, with new articles every single week. So you won't want to miss these audio articles of some of our most popular and most accessed articles on our website, equip.org.